Since his first blockbuster bestseller, Presumed Innocent, was published 30 years ago, most of Scott Turow's legal thrillers have been set in the fictional Kendall County, modeled on his hometown of Chicago. But in his latest novel, Testimony, he takes us to The Hague's International Criminal Court, where an American lawyer has been recruited to serve as prosecutor in the investigation of a massacre of the population of a Roma refugee in Bosnia. It is published by Grand Central. I'm delighted it has brought Scott Turow back to our show. Welcome back.
Thank you, Leonard. It's always nice to be with you.
Why did you want to write about the International Criminal Court in The Hague? Have you spent any time there?
Well, I have now. Originally, I was at a party in The Hague, and there were a group of lawyers who worked at the various international tribunals who surrounded me and said, "You've got to write a book about this place. It's just amazing. The backstories, the back channels, the crimes." And, you know, very often what people think will make a great book is not likely to. But this one, I held on to this idea. I thought, you know, I don't think I've read anything set at the ICC, and this could be pretty amazing.
When was it founded? Was it created by a treaty signed by UN member nations?
Yes.
But not the United States?
No. The United States was a driver in the negotiations that created the International Criminal Court. So we get to the year 2000, the so-called Rome Statute, which is what the treaty is called, is signed by 139 nations, including the United States. Then 9/11 happens, and the Bush administration declares that it is unsigning the Rome Statute, and we're no longer bound by our obligations there. This was a product of the apprehensions of the American military, which argued that it's hard enough being the world's leading peacekeeper without having to worry about our troops being prosecuted by some foreign court. And as sensible as that argument seems on the face of it, when you get into the details of how the ICC works, that's really a vain fear. And I understand that the people who protect us overseas don't need any more on their plate, but They're not right about this.
You wrote an op-ed for Bloomberg, published today.
Today.
About how the American refusal to join the ICC has hurt its chances to prosecute Assad and other war criminals. If the U.S. signed the treaty, would that give the court more power to go after people like Assad?
I think that the moral authority of the United States is such in the world that it would reverse a trend that has grown since we unsigned to undercut the court. Once we unsigned, Syria, among other nations, refused to ratify the treaty. And so we find ourselves in this situation where we're bombing airfields instead of trying to apprehend Assad and put him on trial because we made that decision in 2002.
We've faced similar problems in Sudan.
We have faced similar problems in Sudan, although the Sudanese there have been charges leveled against them. The world needs the ICC. It doesn't need the ICC as it's currently functioning, but it needs the ICC as an effective agency to bring justice in the aftermath of horrible atrocities.
Is its mandate specifically to investigate war crimes, offenses that the government in question can't or won't look into?
Yes, but the predicate, and this is what the U.S. military doesn't reckon with, is that the justice system in the subject country has to have failed. And it's unimaginable in the United States, if there are serious war crimes allegations against our soldiers, that we would not investigate them. We may conclude that they're bogus, but that by itself is enough to foreclose action by the ICC.
What penalties can it impose on parties who are found guilty?
The maximum sentence is 18 years in prison, and many of the people who've been convicted have faced that.
It's more like a European court than an American court?
It's more like a European court.
With judges?
There are judges. Cases are tried before a panel of three judges. The investigation is monitored by a panel of three judges. There's a separate prosecutor's office. It has aspects of the American system.
But it sounds like the Nuremberg trials.
This follows the example that began with Nuremberg.
Your narrator is an American former prosecutor, Bill Ten Boom, who likes to be called Boom, who's going out who's going to work at the ICC after leaving his law firm and his wife. Is he in the midst of a midlife crisis?
Yeah, he's in the midst of a midlife crisis, although it's a little more particular than the usual generic midlife crisis. Something, his parents have revealed something to him at his 40th birthday that has turned his life over. And a lot of what his movement to The Hague is about is to try to make peace with these facts.
And we don't want to have too many spoilers here, but...
Not too many.
The
spoilers.
Fact is that he is Dutch does also give him some kind of connection
right.
to The Hague.
Right. I mean, it's supposed to be a... As the his friend from the State Department who talks him into this assignment says that it's a roots thing for Ten Boom, although Ten Boom knows that his family is not purely Dutch.
The case involves allegations of kidnapping and murder of the residents of a Roma refugee camp near Tuzla in Bosnia. Are there a lot of Roma people in the former Yugoslavia?
There are tons.
These people are refugees from Kosovo, which would have been another part of the former Yugoslavia.
Yes, most of the gypsy population was forced out of Kosovo. Most did not go as far as Bosnia. And the incident that's at the heart of testimony is completely fictionalized.
Well, I was going to ask if it was based on anything.
Yeah, there are plenty of things in testimony that are based on known facts.
In this case, he's asked to investigate claims that some 400 inhabitants of the refugee camp called Barupra were herded into a mine and then buried alive in April 2004.
Right. That's the allegation. And the thing that's significant is that Barupra is surrounded by five camps where American peace enforcement officials, peace enforcement troops were serving.
So that's why somebody who has European connection but is an American would be appropriate for dealing with this case.
Right, because there is something called the American Service Members Protection Act that keeps... which is referred to as the Hague Invasion Act in West Europe, because our president is authorized to send troops to The Hague to bring back anybody accused.
So among the suspects, we have Serb paramilitaries, organized crime, but also American troops?
Yeah. The Barupra, the refugee camp, is surrounded by five American bases. And, of course, the question is, how could 400 people have been massacred within miles of the Americans in an area that they control, unless the Americans were involved in this.
Why would the Americans want to get rid of an entire Roma village?
Well, the supposition in testimony is that they are angry because the Roma led them into an ambush as they were attempting to capture the fugitive Bosnian president, who is called Lazo Kajevic in my novel.
Based, obviously, on Radovan Karadzic.
A pretty close resemblance.
My guest is Scott Turow, whose latest book is called Testimony. You open with the testimony of the lone survivor of the massacre, a Roma man named Ferko Rinčić. What's Boom's job there?
Well, Boom finds that the pretrial chamber, which is the investigative body at the ICC, has decided, because there's only one witness, that they want to hear live from Ferko. Boom has been on the job all of 3 days when he has to put Ferko on the witness stand. And essentially, he is listening to his story, that is Ferko's story, for the first time, just as the reader and the judges are.
And he has to believe what he's saying. Is all this complicated by the fact that the Roma have also engaged in criminal activities and deceptions?
It is, as one of the characters in testimony says, you know, Mr. Ten Boom, I've been all over the world and I can tell you the lesson of experience, gypsies lie. And learning about the Roma people was one of the most fascinating parts of my research. And some things that we don't understand is they have no written history. And so the sort of contemporaneous reinvention of events that we call lying is, in fact, part of their culture.
So how did you research this?
I researched it over a period of years. I read first. First I had to learn about the ICC, which as a lawyer was not as hard as having to come to grips with the history of the Balkans and Bosnia in particular. And then I also read just tons about the Roma.
This is a big change for you because, as I mentioned earlier, most of your books have taken place in a fictionalized Chicago, which you know quite well.
Right. And you know, Boom is from Kendall County and parts of the book taken back to Kendall County. So Kendall County is not entirely abandoned. But obviously the principal action, it takes place in Europe and to some extent Washington, D.C.
Did you visit Roma villages in the former Yugoslavia?
I did. I did. And, you know, the Roma are one of the most persecuted groups of people on earth. One of the most surprising things I learned early on was that the Roma had been enslaved for four centuries in Romania. And they've been hated, they've been branded, they've been banished. Their movements have been inhibited. They, until quite recently...
In much of Eastern Europe. Yeah. Hungary, they've been persecuted. Poland, they've
right.
been persecuted.
And of course, you know, you can look at this and say they do a lot to bring it on themselves. And they refuse to participate in the majority society. They refuse to share its values, for the most part. And obviously, that has added to the hatred.
They've also given us flamenco and a whole bunch of other
things. Yes, the musical tradition is very rich, but there's no Roma literature.
What is Bosnia like these days, now that the war is over there?
My judgment was that Bosnia is deceptive. Because when you arrive there, knowing how extensive the war was, it's 20 years later when I got there, and basically the Western countries, sort of horrified that they missed the boat on what was happening, have contributed mightily to the rebuilding of Bosnia. So you look around and everything looks beautiful, and it's only when you spend time that you begin to realize how fragmented the society remains. There are three different governments there now. And as one of my Bosnian friends put it to me, everybody knows that the current situation can't stand, and yet nobody knows what the future will be.
It's always been a troubled area. After all, World War I started because of an assassination
right.
in which was then called Bosnia-Herzegovina.
Right. In Sarajevo.
You also have a lot of colorful characters in this book, and just want to mention them before you go. A disgraced American general, a lesbian ex-army fixer, a Belgian forensic anthropologist, a British Roma lawyer who becomes Boom's love interest. So these are all departures for you, not the kinds of characters that you've been putting in your other books.
Well, yeah, obviously we're on different terrain. I had a great time writing this book.
Unlike most lawyers who become novelists, you haven't given up practicing law. Do you pretty much try to do it 50-50?
No, I'm not close to 50-50 anymore. I'm principally a writer, and I lawyer when something comes along that I find to be really interesting.
Your first book, called 1L, was a nonfiction account of your first year at law school, and it was published 40 years ago. It's been called the law student's Bible. Do you know if law students are still reading it?
Based on the royalty reports, yes.
Things haven't changed all that much in law schools?
Things have changed a lot in law schools, but the core experience in which people feel like they're being sort of unrooted somehow remains the same. And that's what gives 1L its continuing vitality, I think.
Don't you serve on the Illinois Governor's Commission on Capital Punishment?
I did.
And you wrote both a novel and a nonfiction book
I did.
On that. Is that something you feel strongly about?
My experience on the Death Penalty Commission in Illinois turned me, somewhat to my surprise, into a really ardent death penalty opponent. Illinois eventually abolished the death penalty in part as a result of our recommendations.
And the fact that it was discovered a number of people had been unjustly put to death.
Yes, the accuracy of death penalty impositions was certainly subject to doubt in Illinois and many other places.
Do you see a novel as a way of bringing important subjects to a wide audience? Although people may read your book as entertainment, they also get a certain amount of legal education, maybe a bit of editorializing along the way.
Well, I agree with Daryl Zanuck, who once told one of his writers, if you want to send a message, use Western Union.
I think that was Sam Goldwyn, but
well,
yeah.
I am I am trying first and foremost to write a novel, and I'm writing in the suspense tradition. Obviously, a book like Testimony talks a lot about the diplomatic environment at the ICC and the assumptions about it. But the book is not intended to be a debate about the merits of the ICC. Yes, I think the best way to teach somebody something is to tell them a story. But people can make what they want of the facts.
Several of your books have been made into films and TV series, and this looks like prime material.
It isn't, Leonard, because American audiences, especially film audiences, are not all that interested in Europe. So we'll see what happens. There's been some discussions, but nothing firm yet.
And are you back to Kendall County for the next book?
The next book is going to be back in Kendall County in its heartland.
How far along are you in that?
I'm still in the thinking stage. There are certainly substantial notes, but I have a way to go before I even know what's happening.
Meanwhile, there's been a lot of ads for this book. I see ads for Testimony all over the New York Times, for example. So your publisher must feel very strongly about this.
Well, I hope they do. Grand Central is a wonderful publisher, and they've been wonderful for me. So I'm glad they're standing behind the book, and we'll see what happens.
And now you're on the book tour.
I am. Yeah, the dreaded book tour, which I really appreciate.
Some authors hate it, but do you feel that you actually get good feedback when you're at an event like the one you're appearing at Barnes & Noble at 82nd Street and Broadway tonight at 7 o'clock?
Well plugged. Writing is a lonely occupation, and you write with a vision of some imaginary reader. And the process of going around and meeting the people who actually read your books is stirring at the end of the day. I am grateful to them, and I'm grateful for the opportunity to meet them. I don't want to sound too corny, but I get more sentimental as I age.
I rushed through where you'll be appearing today, so let me do that a little slower. Scott Turow will be appearing at the Barnes & Noble store on 82nd Street and Broadway tonight at 7 o'clock. He'll be signing books, and the book in question is called Testimony. It is published by Grand Central. And Scott Turow, as always, it's been a great pleasure having you on our show. I look forward to the next book.
Thank you, Leonard. It's good, always really good to talk with you. Thanks.